1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century look at the greatest rock bands in history. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, we play a cheap trick on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Surrender, surrender, but don't give yourself away. Hey, hey.
We were touring around trying to go see the Sex Pistols and stuff like that. Well, we enjoyed that, but we also liked the Raspberries.
Well, the thing is the Ramones and the Sex Pistols and Cheap Trick didn't really know what it was. We, you know, nobody wanted to call themselves a punk band.
I want you, want me. I need you to be me.
The Dream Police, they live inside of my head. The Dream Police, they come to me in my bed. The Dream Police, they come into a mess. We both know. You didn't know what you were looking for. Do you hear the voices in your ear? It's the
Hey, welcome back. I'm Robin Zander from Cheap Trick.
And I'm Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick, and we're in the studio. And
if you check out the reviews of Cheap Trick's first five albums, you'll be seeing stars. For instance, on AllMusic.com, there's Cheap Trick's 1977 debut album getting 5 stars. Their second album released that same year, In Color, gets 4.5-star rating. Their masterpiece Heaven Tonight with another 5 stars was in 1978. Cheap Trick's Purely Accidental, Breech, Berth, Bass, Ackwards, Career Breaker, Live at Budokan, that gets another 5 stars, not surprisingly, as Rolling Stone magazine lauds At Budokan as one of the greatest live albums ever made. And then Cheap Trick closed out the 70s with Dream Police at 4.5 out of 5 stars. The punchline of Cheap Trick, guitarist-songwriter Rick Nielsen, was no joke when it came to his lifelong desire to be in a rock band. Bass player Tom Peterson and frumpy-looking drummer Benny Carlos were Rick Nielsen's first recruits in Rockford, Illinois.
I started learning how to play guitar in junior high school and high school and all that stuff, and I played drums. I played all kinds of instruments, and I could never seem like I was always looking for the player that wanted to play as hard and as much as I did. And it was a matter of, you know, we were playing with a lot of different people, but weeding out the people that weren't as committed as I seemed to be. And through all those years, ended up I originally started working with Tom, and then started working with Bunny, and Bunny knew Robin, and it was like it was the weeding out of all the people that really didn't want to work as hard as we did, and we ended up with the four of us, and Cheap Trick was formed. I wanted to go out and play, and to this day, I don't think I'll ever do it. I've never been to a prom or like a football game and basketball games, because my Fridays and Saturdays were always full of playing music. If I was at a prom or at a school dance, it was because I was playing there. And I remember some of the musicians I worked with. You know, we had a band. We thought everything was going fine, and there'd be one guy that says, you know, he had a date with his girlfriend and didn't want to do the show. Well, next week he could go to all the dances and ball games he wanted to, because he was usually out of the group that I worked with. And this band is we're so different, but in some ways we're so much the same that we all do like to to play and work, and we started in a garage, and we still sound like a garage band, I think, but now the garages are a little bit bigger.
Cheap Trick lead singer Robin Zander joins Rick Nielsen in the studio.
There were three of us, and we had it was Tom, Bunny, and myself, and we knew about, actually Bunny knew about Robin, I really didn't, to tell you the truth, and we had heard about him and heard how good he was, and we had a singer that just didn't fit. I mean, he had a good rock voice, but he wasn't. You know, the three of us, we were different enough where we knew that this guy was not the guy that we wanted to have forever. Bless his soul and all that. Good
I remember
luck to the guy.
The guy's name was Zeno, and I was in school with him, and
Bunny kept raving about Robin, so we drove up to Wisconsin Dells, and Robin was in this duo called, what was it called?
I think it was just Zander and Kent.
Zander and Kent, he and another guy. And our manager went up there and with us. And I
wasn't the lead singer in that duo.
Our manager thought it was the other guy. That's true. When I heard Robin, I said, this guy is, whether he's trained in... because my father was an opera singer, and he sings religious music, sings all kinds of stuff. I knew Robin had a unique voice, and I thought, this would be great. Now, here's a real singer as opposed to a screamer rock, the typical rock guy that, goes out and belts it out and stuff. And I thought, man, this guy is tailor-made for the songs that I was writing. And I thought, hopefully he's a nice guy, too. And luckily, I found that out later, but it was like... He had a voice, and I thought, here he is doing Neil Young and Bee Gees songs, doing them note for note perfect. You close your eyes, you'd think they were up there. And I thought, this guy, back to the old bio, he's the man of a thousand voices. He could do it all, and he still can today. And it's like, it just was like, there were three of us, and we needed one more. And then when we got Robin, the picture was a whole picture. It was the band.
I remember.
Then we had to start really working.
I remember. I'd been working. Going back to what Rick said, I was always looking for somebody who'd like to work because I'd been working straight on. Pretty much 5-6 nights a week for about 3 years there, and that's what I was looking for too. Was a bunch of guys that really wanted to do it, and there was no question about Maybe I should go to the bar mitzvah tonight or something like that. I said everybody wanted to work in the band. I remember our first rehearsal that I went to, we rehearsed three nights, and then from then on in, we didn't rehearse anymore. We were out 6 nights
rehearsed.
A week from that point on.
Baby.
Cheap Trick's Southern Girls on their second 1977 album called In Color was no doubt inspired by their brief experience recording demos at Arden Studios in Memphis in hopes of landing a record deal. Setting their sights on the nearest big city, Cheap Trick put Chicago in the windshield and Rockford in the rearview mirror. First lead singer Robin Zander, then Rick Nielsen.
There were a couple bands kicking around in Chicago that had the club scene pretty much sewed up as being like the top two or three bands in Chicago.
Yeah, and to tell it, and a band called Pez Band.
Yeah.
Who else?
There was TW4, which
that was Tommy Shaw.
Yeah, that was Tommy Shaw, and then a couple MS Funk and a couple other bands were kicking around there that were really selling a lot of tickets to their shows and stuff. But to tell the truth, it seemed like a piece of cake because we walked in there and within 6 months, nobody went to see those bands anymore. And we knocked them right out of the ballpark, and I'm not bragging or anything like that. It's just we were different. We sort of just walked into town and took over, and that's true with Milwaukee and Madison and some of the surrounding cities too that we could drive to at that time. The scene was pretty good. I mean, there were enough clubs to play at where we could make a living at it. Plus, we bought a new car that we could drive in instead of pulling a U-Haul behind us. We had a truck finally, and we did pretty good. We had our own sound system, our own light system, and we started making some money enough to keep our band afloat and keep us working. And in that, we were able to broaden our scope and go to other places like L.A. and New York and do showcase shows and stuff like that. Eventually, the word got around the country, or the industry at least, that Cheap Trick was a band that was unsigned, exciting group, whatever. And so they started coming out to see us. In fact, the first time we were thinking about getting signed, there were a couple of companies courting us, and Columbia was one of them. And they came out to see us, and I think it was Milton, Wisconsin, or something weird like that. And Bunny tripped over a case before the show and broke his arm.
Otherwise, we'd probably be signed to Columbia at this time. And broke his arm the night before the Columbia guys came out. And
that was prior to the story about Jack Douglas discovering us in a bowling alley, too. That was before that happened. I guess it was about, we had two drummers there for a while. For about 6 months, we had two drummers. So here was Bunny up there with a cast on his arm.
Cast on his arm, playing right-handed. So we had two drummers, and we got signed on the spot. It was actually Tom Werman came to see us in Quincy, Illinois. I remember that. And Jack Douglas came and saw us, like you said, in a bowling alley in Waukesha, Wisconsin.
When Douglas came out, he was a producer, that had big success with Aerosmith, and when he came out and loved the band, that was sort of the clincher there, and so they decided to go ahead and sign our band.
Australia.
From In Color, the second Cheap Trick album in 1977, despite the initial critical kudos for the first two Cheap Trick albums, all-important 20th Century Radio airplay was zip. How did they even get the opportunity to make the brilliant third album Heaven Tonight? Again, lead guitarist, songwriter Rick Nielsen, and singer Robin Zander.
And Redbeard, we could still be, you know, sitting in the doldrums, wandering around, wondering if, gee, will we ever do any good again? Because we stuck together when it was really bad, when nobody gave a crap, but we were still recognized down when we walked down a street. And yeah, I used to know your music and all that stuff. So we kept that base. It wasn't like we got back together. We just kept going. We were dying.
We didn't have to kiss anybody's ass to get our foot in the door. We kicked the door down is what we did. You got to remember, we're not from LA or New York. We're from the Midwest, and it's a little more difficult here to be recognized immediately in the industry. Like, you know, you've really got to work hard when you're from the Midwest. It's either you're recognized faster if you're from LA or New York.
Well, if our first record does well, we're going to hang together. If it doesn't, we're going to break up.
You know,
well, wait a minute.
We decided to do it for a living, whether we made it big or not. And we were doing it for a living anyway. In those early days, you know, in those first couple records, do you think we figured there was a slot in radio for us? And we, you know, did you think we thought that? Hell, obviously there wasn't. We knew that. So it took a long time for us to bring radio to us in the first place. It wasn't until our third record was Surrender that we actually got on the radio.
Just
Surrender, But Don't Give Yourself Away. Cheap Trick from their excellent third album, 1978's Heaven Tonight. Coming up next, Robin Zander and Rick Nielsen point out the perils of being mislabeled as punk rock in 1978. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Rick Nielsen and Robin Zander for The Essential Cheap Trick Part 1.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Robin Zander from Cheap Trick.
And I'm Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick, and we're in the studio, and welcome back.
And I'm Redbeard. Before the band established themselves as headliners, Cheap Trick earned the unofficial dubious distinction of being the best opening act in all of rock. Lead singer Robin Zander is followed by Rick Nielsen in the studio.
We played, I think it was two shows with Queen, and I remember the second show where you sat in the audience and watched Queen play, and there must have been at least 12, 13,000 people in the audience. And here's Rick and Tom sitting there heckling them. Freddie, you faggot, get off the stage, all this stuff. And we got thrown out of the building and all this stuff happened. But since then, I mean, we're good friends with those guys. But
we should say that they had heard our tape before it was released, and Queen took a chance with us and put us on a few shows even before our record was released. So to this day, we're like good friends with Roger Taylor and Brian. They gave us a big break. I mean, because
yeah, they really did. That was cool for them to give us
drop that heckling stuff.
Roller was another of the many great songs on Cheap Trick's third album, Heaven Tonight. Contrary to revisionist history, there were a lot of rock fans, rock critics, and radio programmers who did not embrace the punk rock sound or ethos happening at the time of Cheap Trick's first three releases. These same pundits viewed punk rock as kind of a threat to undermine the rock establishment. But unfortunately, practically all new bands then were tagged with that punk rock label, including Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, The Cars, and Cheap Trick. Here's Rick and Robin.
We were touring around trying to go see the Sex Pistols and stuff like that. Well, we enjoyed that, but we also liked the Raspberries.
Well, the thing is the Ramones and the Sex Pistols and Cheap Trick and a handful of other bands that were coming out at that time didn't really know what it was. We didn't, you know, nobody wanted to call themselves a punk band at that time. That was just a label that was sort of thrown on
power
people.
Power pop, you know, they're trying to put a label on it, and everybody was different. New wave, that was it.
I think we were just part of it. We were part of that sort of surge that was sort of sick of listening to disco music on the radio. And it reminds me of the way heavy metal seems to be going now, where it's not really heavy metal music anymore. It's so generic sounding. A lot of these groups are so similar in sound that the public gets sick of it. And that's sort of the way it was when we were putting out our first and second record. It was, everybody was just sick of what was on the radio, and they were sick of hearing that thing. So it's we were just part of that sort of movement, or whatever you want to call it.
We were part of the sickness. So, you know, it's like you talked about the image thing, though. Like when we were got together, we had so many people tell us, you know, you got to get Bunny to dress up differently, and Rick, you know, tone that guy down and do this, do that. You know, it's like, you know, we blew it up a little bit. We used our image, you know, not everybody likes it. We know that. But, I mean, we used our image like, yeah, there are four different guys, but, boy, they play well together. That's what we always thought. And when they tried to change us, you know, whether it was writers, whether it was
And they did, too.
People,
everybody
tried
to
like,
change.
Man,
for instance, when we went out to L.A. Before we got signed, we went out there and played once. And
three shows at the Starwood.
Right.
And we had everybody that lived
Kim
in
Kim Fowley comes backstage, and he's hanging out with us and stuff, and he goes over to Rick, and I'm standing there, and he goes, hey, Rick, you know, it really looks great. Everybody looks great up there, but listen, we've got to get Bunny. We got to change his image a little bit. We should dress him up like David Bowie. Oh, can you imagine that? That would be.
It was.
Yeah,
I think it's a good idea.
I mean, he looks the same. He looks the same now as he did then. But if you can imagine that, we got that kind of stuff all the time. You know, about
you
got to
kick that singer out. The guy. He doesn't say the F word enough.
Right, Rick. I don't know about that baseball cap. I don't know. That's not rock and roll. You know, yeah. What the hell? You know,
we still get the same review almost every place we go. You know, the zany guy and the pretty boys and the we are what we are. We played it up a bit because we did some of that stuff, but it was really what we were. It was like, but yeah, we're different guys. You know, none of us date the same girl or, you know, live in the same house. We do completely different things on our own, but together as a band, it's like it's musical cement of some sort. It's even difficult for us to explain after so many years.
Then with just that very year, the next year, 77, when In Color came out, I remember being at Tower Records and looking around for the album right when it came out, and some fan comes up to me and out of the blue knew who I was and explained to me that he went in there and didn't know who Cheap Trick was, but he saw the album cover and he didn't buy it at first because he thought it looked like some kind of Sparks record or something, and he didn't like that just because the impact of the image was so quirky looking to him that he didn't really pick up the record until he'd heard actually a couple songs. And then he went back and bought the record. And so, you know, the image at first was good and bad at the same time.
Still is.
Going to a party. Meet me on after school. Shit.
album Heaven Tonight contained an irresistible cover of The Move's California Man. The Move were a brilliant post-Beatles English band led by Roy Wood and Jeff Lynne, who somehow found popularity in America to be elusive. Here's Cheap Trick's Robin Zander and Rick Nielsen.
Now, I didn't know who The Move were until Rick, Tom, and Bunny presented this stuff to me. Bunny was a big fan of The Move, and so was Rick. I mean, Rick and Roy are actually good friends. Since then. Well, I've got every Move record ever made. I mean, they were a great band, excellent band. And, you know, it's not just that, though. There's a lot of other influences. You know, I think the Beatle thing is a lot to do with my voice, too, because I was a big Beatle fan, big John Lennon fan, put it that way. But also along with that, you know, it's that sort of early 60s British invasion thing. It's not just the Beatles. It's the Rolling Stones and the Yardbirds and the Who and the Kinks and the Animals and all those groups. I think Cheap Trick was influenced by big time, you know.
That's the thing where I get it, but you know, I was more of a fan of the Rolling Stones and the early Small Faces and Idle Race and The Move and bands like
the
that
Yardbirds
than the Beatles.
Influence.
But you know, there's the ultimate. We got one review at one time for the song Big Eyes. And they said, "Oh, it sounds like a Beatles song." You know, actually, it was more. I tried to take a Fleetwood Mac riff that I liked and turn it around. No one ever mentioned that.
if you really think about it, Redbeard, The Move were sort of like a twisted Beatles anyway.
Jeff Lynne, he is so good.
Yeah, he's great. And but, I mean, certainly Roy Wood. I mean, that
Roy
guy
Wood's
is one
too.
Of a kind. That you guy, know, all the stuff that he's done, you know, besides The Move and forming Electric Light Orchestra and
Helicopter.
And Wizzo and Helicopter and all the stuff that he's done is just brilliant. That's just nobody cares to know about it.
Still to come, how the third time was the charm for Cheap Trick's first hit, I Want You to Want Me. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Rick Nielsen and Robin Zander, celebrating their Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction with The Essential Cheap Trick Part 1.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Robin Zander from Cheap Trick.
And I'm Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick, and we're in the studio, and welcome back.
And I'm Redbeard. Cheap Trick's lead singer Robin Zander and lead guitarist Rick Nielsen both readily admit that dumb luck and perseverance are crucial to their long career, going all the way back to the famous second album cover.
Well, that's one of the things we do best, I think, is make mistakes that turn out pretty good.
Yeah, we wanted to call the album In Color, and we go to do the photo shoot, and the guy showed up with the only black and white film. I swear to God.
Showed up with just black and white film. Plus, it was raining out, and nobody expected that. So it was all wet and raining.
I mean,
it's
like some of the best ideas later sound like good ideas, and some of the best mistakes turn out to be great mistakes. And like the Budokan record, I mean, that was the most unplanned thing on earth.
I want you to want me. I want you, want me, I need you to need me, I die.
Want You to Want Me Live was the first big Cheap Trick hit, coming from their Live at Budokan album, a story so amazing and unpredictable that we have devoted an entire In the Studio episode just to it. But what remains little known to most rock fans is that I Want You to Want Me had been recorded and released by Cheap Trick already twice before, with nothing but crickets in response in North America or the UK. Rick Nielsen and Robin Zander point out that I Want You to Want Me was written even before their record deal.
1879, right after their Magna Carta.
That's pretty cool. I think it's pretty neat.
I wrote that song, I Want You to Want Me, on the Budokan. It was the third time we released that song. It was a hit in France. It was a hit in Japan. And we couldn't get arrested with the damn song. And
Redbeard, that,
and
that
we
song.
Were, after that, we were going to quit. We were never going to play that song again.
That song was written before we recorded the first album. In fact, we presented that to the company before the first record was recorded, and they passed on it.
You can hear the gratitude in Rick Nielsen's comments as Cheap Trick awaits their Rock Hall recognition, while Robin Zander reminds us that, in between the notes, it's the attitude that makes it rock and roll.
I play in a rock band, and it's like, I mean, yeah, we take it seriously, but at the same time, come on, we're lucky to be able to go out and play and do what we like and have some fun with it. I mean, when somebody's, I'm a serious musician. Well, to me, a serious musician is the first year violinist with the London Philharmonic. Now, that guy's serious. Anybody else that stands around and does the Spinal Tap moves and, you know, sticks their tongue out like, you know, a million and a half times, even though difficult work, that's not, you know, how you know, you take it seriously, but at the same time, wait a minute.
Well, you know, it's, even if he is the, if he's the best violinist and also has a personality that matches everything he does, then that's the way to go.
Then
it's cool.
Then it's the ultimate. That's why you see, you know, you when you find the few soloists and you find the crazy pianist or violinist, or I'm using those instruments because it seems like a more serious thing, because it's not, you know, coupled with a, you know, an arena and a 5,000 watts of power. Once in a while, you get some of these crazy, quirky people, and it makes a better story than the generic run-of-the-mill, everybody's the same. And we were never the same.
This for more.
incredible song from Cheap Trick. When I Wake Up Tomorrow opens with Rick Nielsen's detuned ascending chord progression, highly reminiscent of Jimmy Page on Physical Graffiti. Then Robin Zander's strong yet restrained vocal builds until that huge hook in the chorus. These days I wonder how I'm gonna make it tomorrow. These days I wonder what will come of tomorrow. It perfectly captures the uncertainty many of us feel increasingly in a post-9/11, post-Great Recession world. And then, When I Wake Up Tomorrow is over far too soon, leaving the listener wanting more. You can get it from Cheap Trick. Bang Zoom Crazy Hello, now at Amazon. Cheap Trick's Robin Zander and Rick Nielsen return here in the studio with me next week for part two. I'm Redbeard. I'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests Robin Zander and Rick Nielsen, who return at the same time next week. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brune, theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.